Path to Unconditional Love, Chapter 8. Walking Underneath the Moonlight and the First Tantric Experience. The next day, Alessa and I flew to the seminar as if to a celebration. There was not even one thought of not coming, of missing it. Even in the evening, when we went to bed, we were in excitement and anticipating new practices, new lectures, and new discoveries. The tutors gave us such a powerful and bright energy boost. They answered all our questions so skillfully and spoke about complex issues in such an accessible way that for a long time after the seminar, we felt extremely clear. We understood the whole essence of things, experienced an unprecedented rise, a desire to comprehend the truth. We'll continue to talk about healing today, Chandra said, sitting down at an improvised table in the front of the gym, and in particular about the diagnosis of illnesses. But before the lecture, I would like to hear your feedback. Yesterday, we did a healing practice for the treatment of patients. If you felt something, if you experienced phenomena, please come on to stage and tell us about it. A wave of excitement went through the hall, and I saw that many people wanted to share their stories. Several hands flew up in the air at once. Among them was the gray-haired, thin woman who I remembered as having been particularly active yesterday in asking the tutors her questions. She was so bright, positive, and very energetic, despite her old age. The woman got up from her mat and walked up to the stage, and all our eyes were on her. "Good afternoon to you all," she said, looking around the hall. "My name is Tatiana, and I want to give many thanks to the Master who makes all this possible. Thank you for this knowledge." The woman's voice broke, and I realized that there were tears of joy in her eyes. "After the car accident, my daughter couldn't walk. For 5 years, she had been moving only in a wheelchair, suffering from bed sores. The doctors gave up on us, saying that there was no chance to start walking again. And so, I came home yesterday, and she met me standing on her feet. Can you imagine? I didn't believe it at first. She walked by herself." The audience erupted in applause. It was really amazing. We all felt a little involved in this miracle. We experienced the emotions of this gray-haired woman. She was crying out of happiness, and we experienced an unprecedented enthusiasm, realizing that the knowledge really helped. It healed, gave strength to those who need it. So, meditations like yesterday should be done. I was convinced of this myself, but I did not dare to go out in front of everyone and tell them about my mother. I was ashamed to expose her weakness, the whole situation with my stepfather. It was unpleasant to talk about how much my mother was broken, how much she was mired in depression. After Tatiana More people came out, shared their stories, told about their small victories. Many participants in yesterday's meditations had achieved results. Their loved ones felt improvement in one way or another. When everyone had spoken, Chandra conducted another dynamic meditation with us, and the lecture began. So, today, we will talk about the diagnosis of illnesses. The easiest way to detect the illness is by the eyes, explained the tutor. First of all, we look at the state of the eyes. The color of the sclerus, the color of the iris, if the eyes are bright or cloudy. By the color of the eyes, you can determine a young person or in person. If the eyes are black, brown, or green, then they are people with young energy level. And if the eyes are pale, light gray blue, they are in people, calm, balanced. What if they're a mixed color? Someone from the audience asked. For example, brownish gray or grayish blue? It means that the average energy level is neither very in nor very young. Next, look at the glint in the eyes. A person with bright eyes is healthier than a person with cloudy eyes. Then, we look at the sclerus. This is the protein around the pupil. We also pay attention to its color. If it is white, then it is healthy. But if the color of the sclerus is yellow or gray, if there are burst capillaries, this indicates illnesses. We also look at the eye shape, whether it is elongated or round. If it is elongated, it is a solar eye shape. It is from the Latin meaning sun. This indicates a high level of yang energy. If it is round, this is a lunar eye shape, which means it is a yin person with moon-shaped eyes. This is how we determine the potential of a person. And then we look at the inclination of the eye. The cat's eye with an upturned corner suggests an overabundance of energy. If there is no inclination, it means that the person is balanced. But if the corners of the eye are lowered down, this is a sign of melancholy, depression, decline, a desire to escape, hide, separate from the world. What if the eye shape is yang and the color is yin? Asked Alessa. My sister was sitting to my right with her usual notebook. Then look for other signs, the tutor said softly. If the corners of the eyes go up and they are brown and shiny, it means that the person is young. If they are down, blue and cloudy, it means that the person is yin. But these are only external signs that give an idea of the overall level of energy and health. A more accurate diagnosis can be made using the iris. It is best to view it through a magnifying glass. In this case, the left eye will reflect the right side of the body, and the right one will reflect the left side. The lower part is associated with the Muladhara chakra. The middle is Anahata, at the level of the pupil. Then, Vishuddha a bit higher above the middle, then Ajna, closer to the upper part, and at the top is the Sahasrara chakra. And how do we know that this particular chakra is affected? What are the signs? Asked Maria, that young woman who had told me about the chakras yesterday. There are certain changes in the iris, deviations in the fibers, that run from the center to the periphery. The tutor replied readily. When you take a magnifying glass, you will see a lot of thin threads that are arranged in several layers. And where the person has illnesses, various spots and dots will be located in that chakra, in that sector. There are also separations of fibers, when the fibers diverge, and in this place there is a dark hole. Also, the fibers can go in waves. This is the initial stage of the illness. As I listened to Chandra, I wanted to try it right away. Pick up a magnifying glass and practice. The separation indicates an eating disorder, a weakness, continued the tutor. The dots are the transition to the level of the physical body. They can be black or brown. This means that there are functional disorders in the organs. There may be a color change when the upper part of the iris is lighter and the lower part is darker. It means there is less energy in the upper chakras than in the lower ones. Thus, almost with the naked eye, right away, without seeing the aura, you can determine who a person is, what their pathologies are. What other diagnostic methods are there? Maria asked again. Is there anything else we can do within our level right now? After listening to the question, the tutor nodded. Yes, there is another very simple method. We know that the organs correspond to the chakras, and the chakras are located in the spine. Along the spine, there are nerve endings. Our organs are connected to the spine and to the outside of the body. And each organ sends signals to the spine. Along it is the bladder meridian, the longest one in the body. And there are all the signal points that tell about disorders in the organs. And so, with these points, we determine which illness a person has. That is, we need to focus on the pain? Asked Tatiana, the gray-haired woman who had been talking about her daughter at the beginning of the class. Exactly. You put the patient lying on their stomach, their arms along the body or under the chin, and then you start to look for the most painful points along the spine by pressing it. To heal a particular illness, you need to actively massage these points. As a rule, inside these areas, the person has painful knots. They need to be massaged despite the pain, 20 or 30 minutes at a time, until the pain goes away. And then this signal goes to the spine and then to the ill organ, and it begins to recover. A few such sessions can completely heal the illness. For example, one woman suffered from severe inflammation after an abortion. She was almost ready to go to surgery. The Cossack's area could not be touched. We did 6 massage sessions with her. She went to the doctor. She came astonished, and said, "I'm fine." In other words, this is a very great thing, reflexology. Just by pressing on one point, you can heal a person. And pressing on another, you can kill. The ancient Kunaichi knew these points. They could press on them, and the person would die. And we will begin to study these points. After the massage, the person should be covered with a warm blanket, and they must lie down for a while. The next day, at the same time, you work with them in the same way, and you do so for a week. Chandra's story was so interesting that the 40 minutes of the lecture passed quickly. There was a feeling of satiation, although there was a lot of information. But everything was so understandable, so clear. The tutor gave many examples from her practice and freely answered all our questions. At the end, I had a clear and detailed picture of how to diagnose correctly, and I was so eager to try reflexology. I thought about how great it would be to help my mother, to get rid of her chronic ulcer, to ease her condition. After the lecture, there were various practices, meditations, an hour-long yoga class, and relaxation. The second day was even more intense than the first one. During one of the breaks, Indra, one of the assistant mentors, came up to Alessia and me. "Girls, would you like to take a walk this evening? Show me the town. What interesting places do you have? Where do you walk? How do you relax? I don't know anything about you." The man smiled benevolently. He said it so simply, without any romantic connotations, as a like-minded and older friend. "Oh, we'd love to," my sister said, the sparkles in her eyes dancing excitedly. We were pleased that Indra had made this offer to us. He was not yet a tutor, but he was moving confidently along the path of knowledge. He already knew and could do a lot, and communicating with such a person promised to be very interesting. We finished the second day of the seminar with the insight exercise. The tutors asked all participants to stand facing each other, put their hands on the shoulders of the neighbors, on the right and left, and touch their heads. We stood there, meditated, focusing on our heartbeats, and sent energy to the whole world. We gave it away and received much more in return. It was an unforgettable experience. A huge surge of bright joy. At one point, I felt like I was the size of the entire universe. The three of us, Alessa, Indra, and I, met after the seminar near the grove. It was late in the evening, and the cold February sun had sunk below the horizon long ago. Our little town was completely plunged into darkness. Indra was very simply dressed. He wore a snow-white chiton only at the seminar, and in ordinary life, no expensive jewelry, no hint of luxury, no bright colors. He was wearing a plain gray jacket, dark trousers, and a black knit cap. His appearance was ordinary and unremarkable. He was a master at merging with the common people, successfully hiding his difference from them, like a true stalker. Later, when Indra left and I tried to remember his face, I couldn't do it. It was too typical, without any remarkable features. The average face of a middle-aged man, not too beautiful, but not too repulsive. We walked slowly for the oak grove. Along the way, there was a relaxed, spiritual conversation. Indra readily answered our many questions. And so, when we reached the Volga, we stood near its steep bank. The oak grove was behind us now, and the trees were bare, swaying gently in the wind in anticipation of spring. The beautiful river lay ahead. On the opposite bank, there were evergreen coniferous forests. The perfection of the view, bathed in cold moonlight, was breathtaking. We stood in silence for a while, unable to take our eyes off the magnificent landscape. "Do you know who needs all your troubles and misfortunes?" Indra asked suddenly. Alessia and I looked at each other in surprise.
"No. Who?"
"Her,"
Indra replied.
"Who?"
I didn't understand. "Here she is," the man repeated, indicating the direction with his eyes. Following his gaze, we finally realized that Indra was talking about the moon. It hung high above the grove, like a huge, pale, yellow pancake.
"Start swearing at her!"
"Swearing?" I asked, quietly, not believing my ears. I looked at Indra in disbelief, then at my sister, who was also in culture shock.
"Yes, swear, curse her!"
No, Indra was not joking. He was more than serious, letting us know that this was a kind of spiritual task, training, which had some higher meaning that was unknown to us. But which one?
First of all, I honestly did not understand why I could curse the moon.
I had always associated it with a certain romance, something mystical, mysterious, with a cold, natural beauty.
Secondly, the wording itself was perplexing. Swearing, that is, being rude, using fool language.
I could not understand how we could do this in the presence of a spiritual leader like Indra. Seeing our confusion, he began to explain.
"There are two powers that affect us, the sun and the moon. The sun gives us its energy. The moon takes it away. She feeds on our negative emotions, pain, frustration, suffering. It is difficult to make an animal suffer, but it is easy to make a human suffer. Cataclysms, wars, destruction, all this gives food to the moon. She can only become the sun when she has absorbed enough negative energy from the earth."
"But how does it happen?" I asked, not quite sure what Indra meant.
"Yeah, how exactly a person is made to be food for the moon?"
asked Alessa.
The human brain has a pleasure center and a pain center. Certain things are associated with the pain center, from the primitive sensations of hunger, cold, and pain, to complex feelings. Other things are related to the pleasure center, for example, the reproductive instinct. And these centers act as a carrot and stick for a person, constantly driving them around the wheel of suffering. By cursing the moon, we get the opportunity to break away from her influence, to be free. Indra paused, looking at my sister and me carefully, trying to determine how well we understood what he was saying. So, we have to swear at her to make it clear that we don't want to be her food? I asked carefully.
Yes, that's right, the man said.
I thought about it. Now, after explanations, everything became more or less clear. And Alessa and I finally tried to fulfill the task given by Indra. Of course, we performed it very poorly. We didn't manage to get angry properly. So it was unlikely that this would help us to free ourselves from the influence of the moon. Nevertheless, this evening walk would always remain in my memory. Later, I heard about Indra many times. He became not just a tutor, but, it could be said, a legendary figure. He was a personification of a real magician, a stalker, a guide of knowledge. Despite the huge workload that all tutors had, constantly moving around, solving organizational issues, preparing materials for seminars, conducting classes with students and answering all their questions, keeping contact with the master, he was engaged in many hours of training and martial combat every day. He trained in the forest like a real Shaolin monk, never sparing himself. Indra even wrote an autobiographical book where he told a lot of really interesting things about the school, about the knowledge, about the master. He shared his personal experience, told about his path. I always remember the meeting and communication with this person, however brief, with gratitude. You can imagine my surprise when on the next day Mukta spoke of the moon and the sun. Our next lecture was devoted to the divine power, the laws of the octave, and the flows of energy. The divine power is hydrogen, H3, explained Mukta. And when this hydrogen begins to descend on a person, that is, when a person is tuned in to the perception of it, they begin to understand a lot. They start to experience Satori. The entire universe is one large octave. And when it comes to an end, a black hole is the point that gives the push for a new octave. It's like if we take one small atom of this table. This one atom carries the potential of the entire table. And if we take a set of such points, we get a table. The same applies to humans. I listened to my tutor
and it seemed to me that he was looking at me. Although probably this feeling was created for every listener of the lecture.
What do you think is the difference between a simple layman and a sadhak, a person who follows a spiritual path, the path of sadhana? Asked Mukta.
They connect to the higher levels of the octave? Said someone in the audience.
Yes, that's right, the tutor replied. Connecting to the egregor, a sadhak is fed with higher hydrogens and moves to a new octave.
How does this happen?
A person decides to take a spiritual path. They get a push and for some time go forward with this energy, make efforts, do something. Then comes the point of the interval, and here a decline is possible. They stop studying, doing exercise, quit practicing. The old octave is fading. And so, to continue, they need a new push, from inside or outside. A push is a qualitative change after which a person will start moving either down or up.
Mukta paused and looked around the hall, as if to make sure that we all understood what was being said.
The interval is unavoidable in any case. And it is important that a person is ready for this and has thought out in advance what they will do at this moment.
As for the sadhak, what do you think can act as such a push? Mukta asked the audience again.
There was a buzz around the hall as the participants began to offer their own versions.
Meditation, spiritual practices, wise advice, the master's instructions?
That's right, said Mukta. You're all right. The sadhak is given new practices to be understood, and this allows them to move to a new octave. But there are pushes from inside and outside. External pushes can also be different, up to physical impacts. Here, everything depends on the person, to which advice they will listen. It is important to know what the person is more tuned into. If this person is tuned into the power, then everything that will make them weak is simply dismissed by them. But it is difficult for a sleeping person to tune in and see their state truthfully. So they need to ask the master more often. Otherwise, they can fall back without noticing.
How often do we need to have pushes?
It all depends on what we take for an octave. Remember, once and for all, one person can never develop. Otherwise, they would have achieved everything long ago. A person always needs a master, a mentor who could give this push. Of course, there are such unique personalities like Gurdjieff and Osho, who, unlike ordinary people, are able to develop independently. But there are very few of such individuals, and groups and communities are always formed around them.
Mukta spoke briskly, with energy. His voice spread easily throughout the great hall. There was a ringing, vibrating power in it.
For example, Uspensky, one of Gurdjieff's disciples, wrote that no matter what level a person is on, they are always in relationship with the lower and higher levels. Everything in the macrocosm is interconnected. there is no separation.
Let's consider the simplest example, the moon, the earth, the sun. These are the three levels. If we take the earth as a medium level, it is always associated with both the moon and the sun. It may even be said that without the moon, the earth could not have developed, the organic life could not have existed, and the highest level is the sun. It is impossible to imagine the earth without the sun. These are the two levels that are still comprehensible to us. And what is behind the sun and moon is already difficult for us to understand. And if a person says that they can develop themselves, then they separate themselves from what is higher, God, the teacher, the mentor, and what is lower, people who need help. Uspensky also says that it is impossible to rise without raising someone to your level. This means that you need to transfer knowledge in order to grow yourselves. Can a person be on several octaves at once, at different levels? Someone in the audience asked.
Yes, said Mukta. They can be in one octave only at the beginning, and another it may be in the middle or at the end. In one octave, a person's action may look like an evil, and in another, it may look like a good one that encourages them to develop. Any more questions?
And then Vera spoke. Today, she was sitting behind Olesya and me, and we turned back together. But sometimes, when I explain something, I suddenly realize that I am beginning to discover knowledge that I have not thought of before. As they say, I explained it so well that I realized it myself. Why does this happen?
Higher hydrogens are being activated. They give the understanding. A person begins to think in an uncharacteristic state, and more subtle energies are revealed that provide clarity. After all, hydrogen H6 gives an understanding that is something difficult to put into words. And if a lot of people turn on the intellectual part and begin to think together, then everyone begins to develop this center, which is responsible for the perception of finer hydrogens. So gather in groups and reflect and let the truth be revealed to you. With these words, the lecture ended. Music began to play in the hall, and the participants started to get up from their seats to share their impressions with each other. Around the tutor's table, as always, people who wanted to ask personal questions began to gather. Everyone wanted to get an answer to their situation, an explanation of their experience. Indra came up to Alessia and me.
How did you like the lecture? He asked both of us, showing genuine interest. Is everything clear?
Yes, it's all very interesting,
my sister said briskly, drawing the man's attention to her.
Everything was literally laid out in a nutshell.
Indra smiled tightly. This is just the beginning. If you continue to follow the path and become familiar with the knowledge, you will have many more discoveries. The main thing is not to turn away when the interval comes.
I hope there will be someone around me to give me a push.
Alyssa's eyes lit up, and there was a hint of flirtation in her voice. I had noticed only yesterday that she was unevenly attracted to Indra. In his company, she became coquettish, trying to cross this invisible line that separated the student-mentor relationship and the relationship between a man and a woman.
And I would like to thank you again for showing me the town, for taking a walk underneath the moonlight. Indra paused, choosing his words carefully,
as if he were walking along a very narrow mountain path and was afraid to take a wrong step. And I would like to offer you something, to both of you. Indra shifted his gaze from Alessia to me and back again.
How interesting! What is it?
My sister leaned forward, not even trying to hide her impatience. It's too noisy here. Indra mysteriously nodded towards the cloakroom. Follow me. Following the man, we left the hall and almost immediately found ourselves in a small, narrow room designed for school children to change clothes. It was this room that served as a resting place for mentors and their assistants during the seminar. Here, Chandra and Mukta prepared for practices and meditations and tuned in for upcoming classes. The interior of the room was more than austere. Only hangers on the walls and long, low benches around. There was no one in it now. Both mentors were in the hall during breaks, answering participants' questions.
Sit down.
Indra nodded gravely to the seats at the first table, then took the teacher's seat opposite and placed his hands on the table, strong and sinewy, as if carved from marble by a skilled sculptor.
Do you know what Tantra is?
Alessia and I looked at each other and nodded at the same time. By this time, we both clearly understood that tantric practices do not involve sex at all.
Have you ever tried Tantra?
Indra asked, carefully.
No, we've only read about it so far,
Alessia answered for both of us, taking an active role in the conversation.
In that filter book.
Oh, you've read the filter book, said the man. What do you think of it?
It's a wise thing to do, though sometimes it's hard to get through it all, through all this dirt, replied Alessia.
To be honest, I got stuck at the very beginning, on page 21, I admitted. I couldn't get myself to go any further. I then was reading The Space of Love by Megger, where everything is so strongly imbued with a sense of light and goodness that it was difficult to retune. And I was disgusted and threw the book away and didn't pick it for a long time. But then I realized that in a variety of situations, I remember the knowledge that is contained there. And each time I was struck by how accurately and how deeply it was said, and I just couldn't help but continue.
Indra listened carefully and nodded.
Only those who get rid of the blinders can sort the wheat from the chaff and see the knowledge in the book. This is why it is called a filter. Not everyone can see the truth behind the rudeness, all this obscenity, dirt, and cruelty.
The master specifically wrote the book in such a way as to weed out those who do not want to understand, those who look only at the surface of the water and cannot penetrate deep.
I had heard about the book even before Alessia took out and slipped me a battered copy, which apparently had been repeatedly passed from hand to hand. Everyone who was familiar with the school knew about this work. The book caused a lot of controversies and really shocked, excited, and left no one indifferent. It was either vilified or admired for its depth of knowledge. The book describes the essence of tantric practices well, Indra said softly.
Would you like to try it with me?
Of course we wanted to. This offer became something incredible for us. We could not even dream of such happiness.
But for Alessa,
It was also an opportunity to get closer. I saw how she wanted to please this man. Basically, my sister was quite easy about sex, even too easy. Therefore, I already suspected that this interest in Indra was focused more on the physical aspect. But I was not going to interfere. On the contrary, I voluntarily withdrew into the shadows, giving Alessia the opportunity to knock out wedges. She was the one who made the arrangements, set the time, and flirted. Indra himself was friendly, but reserved, and he did not give any reason at all, and in no way encouraged Alessia's aspirations, not at the seminar or during walks, or later during the tantric experience. Indra came to our house on the last night before he left. We were preparing, waiting, imagining how everything would be. I was mentally tuned in to what was going to happen and spent the whole day walking around in anticipation of an interesting experience. Alessia, on the other hand, had been standing at the stove since morning, preparing to make her way to Indra's heart through the stomach. I was initially skeptical about the idea. I understood that Indra would come not as a man, but as a tutor. I tried to convince Alessia of this, but she was so eager to please the guest, so eager to impress him with her culinary talents and lure him into her net, that she did not even want to hear anything. At last, the bell rang, and Sister rushed to the door. "Good evening, girls," the guest said with a slight smile.
"Good evening. We are waiting for you,"
Alessia replied coquettishly, letting the man into the hallway.
"Shall we go to the kitchen?"
As soon as the guest crossed the threshold, Alessia immediately began to fuss, actively demonstrating the typical behavior of a woman who wants to please a man.
"I made a small dinner."
Indra shook his head. "No, thank you. I'm not hungry." Alessia froze in place, blinking in surprise, and even a little disappointed.
"How come? But I... why?"
The guest smiled calmly and kindly. "No, really. I'll pass."
"But maybe cheese pie? One piece, eh? Still warm?"
"I really appreciate your zeal, thank you, but I'll decline." Alessia made several more attempts to pave the shortest path to a man's heart. But Indra was as adamant as he was calm. He refused everything that Alessia offered, and without any stoicism, easily, without making any effort over himself. He was collected and, as it seemed to me, never for a moment forgot why he had come. When Sister retreated and gave up trying to feed Indra, we finally went into the room.
"Whoa! Just like in an Echo Village!"
The visitor was surprised and delighted to our satisfaction. These words sounded to us like a welcome praise, a recognition that we were doing everything right. My sister and I really had a very unusual room, austere, without any unnecessary details. We did not make any effort to do this. It so happened that my stepfather had taken all the furniture out of the apartment, leaving us literally with nothing. But we were happy to live in a free space. We did not even have the usual beds. Instead, there were two mattresses on the floor where we slept. There was only a small mirror on the wall and simple curtains on the windows. The apartment was empty, clean, and fresh. The three of us sat cross-legged on the floor, and Indra spoke.
Tantra is a very broad concept, and it's certainly not sex. As Usha said, Tantra is not a technique, but a prayer. It is not focused on the head, but on relaxation in the heart. One of the tenets of Tantra is to work with human energy, and in particular, with sexual energy. When sexual energy accumulates in the lower parts, it causes tension that requires discharge. To discharge yourself with sex is the simplest and most obvious solution. But, in this case, the accumulated energy will be lost. Tantra allows you to awaken even more sexual energy and redistribute it to the entire body. Indra kept telling, and we were listening to him, literally with our mouths open, trying to remember and perceive as much as possible, because very soon we were going to try these practices for ourselves. And when we were ready, Indra drew Alessa towards him and put her on his lap. Apart from this physical contact, there was no touching, no stroking, much less any kissing or caressing. I watched the process carefully, tuning in, trying to understand how they both felt. "Come here," the man said at last, and we switched places. There was no sexual contact, only the contact of feminine and masculine energy. I felt my energy first, how it was moving, where it was going. Then I tried to feel Indra's active energy, to immerse myself in the yang flow, to feel this interconnection, intertwining, merging. I tried to give him my energy, to fill him up. Alyssa and I took turns sitting on Indra's lap. In turn, we intertwined our feminine energy with him, gave it to our partner, moved it first up, then down. When sister was sitting on his lap, the man slapped her on the thigh several times, sternly, even menacingly. In those moments when she began to reach out to him, moving from the subtle plane to the physical, when he realized that she wanted him, that she tried to engage him in physical contact. Indra taught us to consciously control the flow of energy, to direct it from the bottom up, to the heart, and then to the area of the third eye. And then it would go down the spine through the Sushumna channel. It was unforgettable and unlike anything else. At the end of the practice, I was literally overwhelmed with energy. This was similar to the feeling I got after good sex, only now it was many times stronger, although there was no sex. Fullness. This is what one could call it. By giving, I filled myself up to the top.
"Shall we have dinner now?"
Alyssa asked, hopefully, turning to Indra when it was all over.
"Shall I warm up the pies? Or maybe, at least you'd go for a salad?"
The man shook his head. "Thank you, but I'm really not hungry." After Tantra, he kept his standards high, with confidence, never for a moment allowing himself to slip into the banal things that one would expect from a man after ordinary physical intimacy.
Maybe some tea, huh?
Indra smiled. Well, if you insist, I would prefer green, no sugar. When Alyssa, happy, flew to the kitchen, the man reached for his bag, carefully pulled out a small photo album, and handed it to me. Have a look. I took the album and opened it with a special thrill. This was my first meeting with the master before meeting him in person. The entire photo album consisted of his photos. He appeared in the pictures in different places and different images with different expressive gestures. I did not know who it was then, of course. One thing was clear. This photo album was not a simple one, and neither was the person in the photos. Which picture do you like best? Indra asked, watching my reaction carefully. I thought about it, carefully flipping through the pages of the album, until I stopped at a photo that had sunk into my soul at the first viewing. In it, the master was in the Caucasus Mountains. He stood under a spreading ancient tree, so lofty, calm, wise. His hands were raised, palms open, in a blessing gesture. The incredibly bright face seemed to glow from within. I was struck by his hands. They seemed unrealistically large, even huge, as if they could take you into their arms, close you from all adversity and troubles, provide reliable protection and patronage. This one, I said, pointing to the photo.
This one?
Asked Indra. Yes, that's right, I said confidently. Then I'll give it to you. I looked up at the man, still not believing what was happening. And he smiled gently and nodded, confirming that the picture was really mine now. I pulled the photo out of its transparent pocket, held it to my chest, and raised it up to my eyes again. I looked for a long time and could not get enough of it. Then, until the trip to the school's regional seminar, I kept this photo on the windowsill, waking up and falling asleep under the teacher's blessing gesture. Sister came in with steaming tea in beautiful ceramic mugs. Thank you. Indra carefully took the cup from Alyssa's hands and took a small sip. I'm leaving tomorrow, he said after a short pause, and I'd like to give you a tantric assignment.
Oh, that's very interesting, I said enthusiastically.
Yeah, confirmed Alyssa. What should we do?
You must learn to be different. Change your images, create a new one every day, and try not to repeat yourself. And remember that the image is not only clothing, but also hair and makeup. Complete this task as long as you can, a month or two. The task is not as simple as it may seem at first glance, the man explained
with a mysterious smile. You'll see what the difficulty is. My sister and I looked at each other, delighted, looking forward to another exciting experience. Indra was very interesting to talk to, and he tried to be very respectful to both of us, but I could not help noticing that for the rest of the evening, he was talking more to me than to my sister, although at first it was just the opposite. Apparently, after our practice, he realized that Alessa was nothing more than a spiritual tourist who was not able to seriously follow the path. Our guest did not stay long. He drank the tea made by my sister and quickly started to get ready for leaving. When Indra went out the door, and I was about to close it behind him, he turned at the last moment and said, looking me straight in the eye, "See you at the Echo Village." He said it so calmly and confidently, as if my trip to the Echo Village was a given, as if he had known I was going to be there. I giggled, letting him know that I appreciated the joke. For me, it was as if he said, "Meet me at the spaceport when the flights to the moon begin." Despite Indra's serious tone, I did not even think that his words would actually be prophetic. Although I never met Indra at the Echo Village, it was he who gave me the idea that nothing was impossible. Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website, www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.